Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Content Rookie. As usual, I'm very excited to introduce a guest to you, and today's guest is Chelsea Larson. Chelsea is the XD leader at Expedia, and I'm very happy to have her on the podcast because she recently tweeted a thread that was pretty popular, where she talks about two different design philosophies that I'm sure most of us already working in design as content designers or UX writers will recognize. And today we're going to talk about that a little bit more in detail, as well as a lot of the other things that Chelsea has done and her experience. So if you're into that, please stay tuned, and thanks for tuning in again today. Welcome to the podcast, Chelsea. I'm so happy to have you. Why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Hello, I am Chelsea Larson, an experienced design director at Expedia Group and currently the head of content design for the partner division at Expedia. I live in the Bay Area, and I'm super excited to be speaking on the Content Rookie podcast today.
We're doing product content design at Zendesk, but they did not have the role in the company. It did not exist at that time. So I went to Facebook, where I worked for 4 months. When I was gone, the VP of product design reached out to me because they saw the absence of somebody doing content design and they were hiring a UX writer. I talked to her. She's a great mentor of mine. And her name is Kim Lennox. She's now at Adobe. Mm-hmm. I talked to her and said, you don't need a UX writer. You need a content design leader. Mm-hmm. You need someone to build out a practice. Can you change the title to a senior content design manager? And can I come back? And she said, yes.
Wow.
So, which was amazing. Having somebody who has faith in you and allows you to grow is, you know, one of the greatest gifts a mentor can give to a mentee. So when I got back to Zendesk, it was a really tough first year where I was a content design team of one. But I proved the value, and Kim, you know, true to her word, invested in the practice once the value had been proven to our partners, our product partners and our design partners. And I was able to hire one person, then two more people, and we grew to a team of 13. This was over the course of 3 years. And after 3 years, I was kind of looking around, looking at different scales of business. And I saw that Aaron Burgess, who is an incredible content design leader, had an opening at Expedia Group. Mm-hmm. And we started the conversation, and it really intrigued me because I'd be going from a team of 13 content designers to a team of 60 content designers.
Wow.
And it was a kind of compelling reason to leave because I wanted to see if I could scale the culture that I'd built at Zendesk elsewhere in partnership with a content design leader. Mm-hmm. Because I had not had a content design leadership mentor at Zendesk. So that is where I am now at Expedia Group. And I've been here for maybe 7 months.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Thank you so much. There's so much to unpack there. I'm just going to try to throw it all out there. First of all, I think it's really great how you really highlight that you had these connections from your network, and that's kind of how you look for opportunities and how a lot of these roles also come to be with very specific titles. So really cool that you're mentioning that, because I also have that experience, and some other people have also shared that previously on the podcast. But then to just kind of dig in, because you mentioned you were really interested to see how you could scale your content design leadership. So how has it scaled then?
Yeah, great question. I'm still scaling. So here's what I realized. When I was at Zendesk, I had this world I could control. I had built the team from the ground up. I had also been at Zendesk at that time for 5 years. So I really understood the language of the company, the business, and I knew how to pull the strings that I needed to pull. So we had this incredible content design team, but the rest of the company was kind of chaotic. I had this really safe place for content designers to exist, but they couldn't kind of grow outside of content design because of the rest of the company. At Expedia Group, it's kind of the opposite. So I didn't get to build the team, obviously. The team itself is made up of different acquired product teams of content designers. So you have the Vrbo content designers, the Hotel.com content designers, all of these groups that came together in Expedia Group. And Aaron Burgess brought them under all together under the name of content design. But they didn't kind of come together in practice and process yet. So that was why he hired me. Mm-hmm. And so they have this incredible company where content design is very well respected at Expedia Group. We have the president of the company, the CEO, talking about strings and talking about how important language is in the product.
Wow.
But the actual content design org had experienced a big moment of flux. So it was not settled. So I kind of went from the settled, safe content design team to this changing, morphing content design team. And I really had to look in my toolkit and say, okay, this will work, but this tool won't work. And I've learned some lessons. So I'll give you an example.
All right.
One thing I noticed in the content design team at Expedia Group was that there were so many content designers doing incredible work. But when I did my introductory interviews with maybe 30 of them, none of them knew what each other were working on.
All right.
And I kept hearing the phrase over and over again, oh, I wish I knew what someone else was doing. I wish I could learn from my peers. And so I saw that they had an all hands every, you know, quarter or every month, but that was mostly about like bureaucratic things like, oh, we have a new person coming on the team, or, oh, make sure you do the survey. And I spoke to Aaron and said, let's create an event that's all about celebrating the craft of content design and the community within our org. And so we've created this thing called Community of Craft. It's once a month, and we pick a theme and we highlight content designers across the org. They come in, they speak about their work. We have people like Michael Metz, who gave his button talk just for us.
Wow.
We really make it a moment where everyone can see what each other is doing and learn and grow from that. And that has been wildly successful.
I love
but
that.
But I'll tell you one thing that wasn't successful yet. So in my old team at Zendesk, we had launched a program called Content Buddies, where we paired up two content designers who didn't normally work with each other for an hour a week to talk about anything they wanted, you know, from Netflix to IA. And my old team loved it. It was like their favorite meeting of the week. It was where they could, it kind of felt like study hall in school. Like you could just bring out your messy notes and talk to somebody who really understands where you're coming from. We launched it at Expedia Group and it did not go well. And it was because of a couple of things. The team was so big. There were time zone issues. There are so many differences in skill level. So what happened is that it turned into like a mentorship moment where junior content designers were getting paired with leads and wanting a lot of mentorship, and the leads hadn't really signed up for that. So it just kind of fizzled out, and I had to really learn from that and say like, okay, not everything that I've had success in before will have success again. And so we launched a survey, and we're relaunching the program in a way that will work for the Expedians. And yeah, so that's kind of how I'm scaling things out, living, testing, learning.
I love that. Thanks so much for sharing. So I'm going to ask you a question. This wasn't on my list previously, but I've always wanted to ask someone this question. And that is, so you also worked as an IC before, and now you're leading a really, really big team. So I'm curious to just hear your thoughts on what do you think is more difficult? Is it more difficult to lead a team, or is it more difficult to get like really, really into the craft and keep learning and keep pushing and keep dealing with those stakeholders? What would you say?
This is a question that I, this is a topic that I talk about a lot with Michael Metz, who you just had on your podcast,
yeah.
Because I don't think one is more difficult than the other. They're both equally challenging and rewarding. I will say though, that if you do go into leadership, you give up a lot of your time with the craft. And you spend a lot more time advocating for people. You spend time in spreadsheets. You spend time making resource decisions. But you also get to drive strategy. So now I have the pleasure of looking at a product roadmap and saying, hey, this initiative should be content-led. And I get to put a content designer there, have them lead the initiative from a design perspective and give them that opportunity.
Yeah.
But I also really miss being in the weeds and working on the actual experience.
Right.
So, which is also very hard work. It really depends what you have the capacity and interest for. Because they both have, you know, rewards and challenges.
Yeah. Thanks so much. I think that was a really good answer, as far as I can judge. I have similar feelings about it. I just wish it were easier to go back and forth, you know, like.
Me too.
Be like a really good leader for like a year or two and then go into the craft again for a year. And then, you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. And I actually think that that is how it should be, because you don't want to be a leader who's lost touch with the reality
right.
of the design working day. You know, you don't want to be one of those leaders who says, why haven't you finished this? Or why is this taking so long? Because you don't know how long it takes anymore.
Yeah.
And so I do really try to get FaceTime with my content designers, get into their Figma files just to observe, you know, not necessarily to drive any review, but just to make sure I'm always understanding what their process is and how long it's going to take them and their challenges.
Right. I think you bring up a good point there as well around process, because something I've, well, I mean, struggle is the wrong word, but what I found challenging when I have been leading a team, usually I've been leading like freelance teams, so they were time dependent. So let's say for 3 months, I would be like leading 3-4 content designers and observing their work. And one thing I've really struggled with personally is that in content design, and this is funny because I can compare this since I also worked as chief marketing officer previously. So I had marketing folks under me, and I found it much easier to understand their process and how they were getting to a solution. With content designers, I find it really difficult because I feel like a lot of us have varying processes and the solution is still usually great, but I find it sometimes very tricky to really understand how someone got to that solution. Is this something that you've noticed, and how have you dealt with that?
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up, because I used to be someone who wanted to kind of framework everything and create uniform processes for everyone to do things the same way, because I thought that that led to, you know, a more efficient, you know, democratic design team. And in the past couple years, after observing what you've exactly observed, that everybody does things differently, I've really let go of that as a leader, and I really have to accept and own up to the fact that I might not understand how my content designers are working, but it's really about that final product, and it's about a shared alignment on the context and the concepts. If we're aligned on those, however they get there is their own, you know, path. But as long as we're aligned at the beginning and at the end, I've been more comfortable just kind of letting them go off and do things their own way.
Right.
And it's really surprising. And then I learn from them as well, which is really rewarding.
Yeah, I think it's great that you're sharing that. And I really appreciate that. And I think that is also the benefit of maybe actually being managed by someone who's also in content design. Because I've made the experience, and also some of the people that I've been mentoring, that they're usually managed by designers when they're working in smaller companies. And those managers often really struggle understanding how they're doing their work, you know, what you mentioned earlier, why it's taking so long. And also sometimes if that manager has already worked or led another content designer, then they're used to that person's process, but then the content designer I'm talking to is doing it differently. They've sometimes gotten right. feedback from their manager that they're not working efficiently or not working in that air quotes correct way. So I think that is also a little bit of an issue that I've seen resurface a couple of times.
I think you're absolutely right. I completely agree. And it's funny, I have two content designers, and one is kind of a framework whiz. They really create beautiful Miro and Figma files where everything is annotated. And it's like, if they publish their Figma files, it'd be like a best-selling content design book. And then I have another content designer who is very skilled at research and is very skilled at writing through their ideas just in a doc. They right. both do phenomenal work, but the one who is more skilled at like research and narrative, in a one-on-one, they said, I don't think I'm doing content design or content strategy right, because I look at so-and-so's files. I can't do that.
Right. Yeah.
And I said, don't have framework FOMO. That is not your job. Your job is not to work in a certain, like you said, Nikki, like correct way. Your job is to do content design the way that you do it. And that is why you are hired. And kind of, you know, as a manager or a leader, you can release people from that unrealistic expectation that they're going to work in the same way as their neighbor, you know, because we need everybody to bring their own selves to work. Right. That's how you have a diverse team. But I have noticed that. For sure.
Yeah. I love that. We could end it on that note, mic drop. I think that was great. As myself, I do not enjoy framework work. I'm more the second person in your team. I'm really good at writing my thoughts down and diving into the data and doing the research. So I appreciate that you appreciate both of them.
I'm kind of in the middle. So yeah, I definitely, and I do sometimes get starry-eyed when I see those gorgeous file.
Yeah, same. It gives me real yeah. imposter syndrome when I see them at work. I have to be honest.
I know. I also try to tell my team, you know, the framework is not the output. So we, as content designers, we can kind of tend to work a lot on the work that's about the work, you know, all the planning and proving and explaining. Yeah. But that's not what's going to ship. So I also try to push them to lightweight, flexible frameworks, doing the bare minimum of scaffolding that will help you make your next decision. That is a useful framework.
Right.
So yeah, that's also how I get people out of the framework FOMO mindset.
Yeah, I think that's some really good points there, because for me, I also let it go when I was freelancing a lot with a lot of different clients and a lot of smaller projects, so a lot of context switching. So then you essentially just don't have the time to do it. So I had to, in a way, become a little bit quicker and more efficient. And then sometimes, or often in my experience, frameworks aren't the right tool, especially since in my experience, a lot of clients just don't understand how to look mm-hmm. at them.
Yeah, I really think framework, the people who like frameworks are the people who make the framework.
Yeah, that's maybe a good point.
Yeah.
All right, so let's leave the frameworks behind. But Chelsea, the one thing I really want to talk to you about, I already said it in the intro to the episode. So you recently tweeted this viral thread where you talked about the two prevailing philosophies in UX design regarding good design. And I'd love for you to give a little recap of that thread, especially now that Twitter is potentially going under and a couple of people may have missed it.
Yeah. Also, can you believe that a thread on UX design went viral? I was cracking up.
I love that. I love that.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, yeah. So let me paint the picture for you. I just started at Expedia Group. And when I started, the whole culture was, we're an experience-driven company. We're traveler-centered design. They had the double diamond. It was you know, very design-heavy. And about a couple months in, we had a huge leadership change. And the new leader said, we are velocity-driven. We need to be testing and learning. We need to move quickly.
Mm.
So immediately there were all these cries of, oh, we're losing experience-driven design and we're going to be this like test and learn culture and we're going to be only doing caring about functionality. And I saw this tension between those two schools of thought. And it really came to me as like, it doesn't have to be one or the other. They're both kind of necessary. And since I was new at the company, I wrote down some tips for myself to keep that mindset in place while I was doing my work. So I could run through the tips if you want.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Okay. Please do that.
So the first tip I wrote for myself was don't get stuck in discovery. One of the criticisms I hear a lot with executives or leaders who want things to move faster is, oh, the discovery is taking too long. And they really look months. And I wanted people to reframe discovery as a tool instead of a phase. It can happen at any time in the design process. It happens when you don't know what to do next and you need to figure out what will enable you to make the next decision. And that could be a user test, it could be an interview, or it could just be sticking to a really clear point of view or a strong hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So then the next tip was about always be learning. And this is more about leaning into design as an exploration. You know, develop your hypothesis, design, and test. Don't try to ship the perfect solution. Ship the next step forward. And I love lately I've been seeing that SLC acronym, which is like simple. What is it? Simple, lovable, and complete, I think,
yeah,
instead
I think
of so. MVP. And that's kind of what the always be learning step is about.
I love that.
The next one, this was specifically for my content designers. It was about getting comfortable making decisions. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of people, especially junior designers, thrashing because they don't feel like they are empowered to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And I want them to remember that they were hired for a reason. They have subject matter expertise. They can take an informed risk. And as leaders, we would almost rather them take an informed risk, meaning they can make a decision with the context they have at hand, than swirl for weeks or months on trying to get things right, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And like, sorry to interrupt you there while you're going through the tips, but I think this is a really important one because for me, this is also the one that makes, well, essentially the design philosophy you had Expedia before that was maybe a little bit, in air quotes, slower and more research and data driven. It's the one that makes it work because
right.
It's about the decision taking. Like, you need to look at all that research and all that data and then you need to make a call on it. And this is actually where in big companies I have seen this philosophy fail, even though fail is the wrong word, but that's where I've seen people get frustrated with it and feeling like things are getting stuck or moving too slowly. So it is actually in the end mostly about decision making.
Right. It truly is. And then that's something when our XDLT, which is the leadership level of the experience design group, they went on an offsite and they asked us content design leaders, you know, what would you like us to consider while we're on this offsite? And I said, my number one ask for you is to figure out how you can delegate accountability to the makers at this company. Because when all of the decision making is up at that leadership level, it creates a bottleneck and it creates a disempowered design org.
Right.
And we're so lucky that our XD leaders don't want that. Like, they were like, absolutely, we want to enable and empower people. So this is already changing at Expedia Group. But you're right. Like, at big companies, that's exactly what can slow them down.
Right.
Okay, so I can move on. The next one is about feedback. So feedback should be valued. Feedback is a gift. That is one thing I took from my time at Meta. And feedback is for moving forward. So seek feedback when you need it. Mm-hmm. But don't always need to look for approval.
Right.
And so this is the to treat opinions and feedback differently. So you can actually ask your reviewer if this is a strong suggestion, if this is one person's opinion, or if this is a mandate.
Right.
And if it's not a mandate, it is up to you to decide how to use that feedback. And I think that's really important for junior content designers to understand. The next one was prioritize actions over assets. This is what you and I just talked about. So it's like, only make a framework if you need it to help you be more strategic. Don't make it as your output. The next one I think is really important is give clarity on your role in the project. Because this is another reason why people slow down. So I used to work at Zendesk, which is a Danish company, and very like socialist and very kind. And everybody could have a seat at the table and nobody wanted to make any strong decisions. And so it would take forever. I think it's really important to do, you know, the RACI or DACI chart and figure out who is the design lead, who decides what, who's making the final call. And then the last one is about clarity. So it was don't swirl on scope. Start each project with the foundational information that you need, which is what is the main people problem? What is our success metric? What is known and what needs discovery? This will help you figure out how much time to spend on discovery. And then most importantly, what are we not solving for? That is another one because it'll prevent scope creep.
Right.
So yeah, these were my tips. And it kind of helped me wrap my head around how to move fast, but keep high quality design in mind. And then, yeah, a lot of people on Twitter really liked it.
Yeah. And I think they did for a reason because through, I mean, I get so many messages about this. So a lot of the listeners, there are maybe journalists or copywriters or writers, or maybe also doing something completely different in their, I always call it content design curious. And a lot of them ask me about like, what books should I read? What boot camps should I do? What certificate do I need? And I would like to tell them, listen to this episode, take some notes. Chelsea is really giving some great wisdom here that is kind of the foundation of good content design. Think about that, reflect about that, combine it with the work you're currently already doing, and I think you should be pretty good at your first UX writing attempt, if I'm really honest.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
All right, Chelsea. So we're coming to the end of the episode, and I just want to ask you if there's anything else you want to have mentioned, if there's any final advice you want to drop, any wisdom you want to share, now's the time.
My only wisdom is, you know, for all of you content designers out there, I know it's hard work, but you are at the best party. Content designers are amazing people. We're empathetic. We listen. We try to speak clearly. Communication is at the heart of everything we do. And we're always seeking to communicate the true meaning of something. So if you're ever feeling sad, just look at your neighbor and recognize how awesome they are because you are just as awesome. And I just want to thank everyone for being in this profession because I know it's not easy, but it's very important.
Aw, thanks so much. Even I feel a little bit warm now. I feel like we don't get enough credit.
I know, it's so hard. Yeah, it's been time for me to ask you some questions about Sweden.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so my dad is from Helsingborg.
And
my family is in Lund. And I just wanted to know if you know the name of this cookie. My farmer would make these cookies at Christmas, and they were like little shortbread round cookies, but they had sprinkles on the outside. They almost look like coins.
Ooh, I mean, it feels like it does ring a bell, but I'm not. Let me Google this for you and get back to you. I think I can probably find it out.
It's okay. I was just wondering if it was at the top of your head.
Yeah, but now at least I know why you have the last name you have, because I was curious. I was like, this sounds Swedish. Well, here, now we know.
My fafa's name was Lars Larsson. So
oh, wow. Sorry. That's some serious content design naming magic right there. All right, Chelsea, thank you so much. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Content Rookie. As usual, I'm very excited to introduce a guest to you, and today's guest is Chelsea Larsson. Chelsea is the XD leader at Expedia, and I'm very happy to have her on the podcast because she recently tweeted a thread that was pretty popular where she talks about two different design philosophies that I'm sure most of us already working in design as content designers or UX writers will recognize. And today we're going to talk about that a little bit more in detail, as well as a lot of the other things that Chelsea has done and her experience. So if you're into that, please stay tuned, and thanks for tuning in again today.